Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This episode is brought to you by Bumble. So you want to find someone you're compatible with, specifically someone who's ready for a serious connection, totally open to having kids in the future, is a tall, rock-climbing Libra, and loves rom-coms with vegan pizzas on Tuesdays just as much as you do. Bumble knows that you know exactly what's right for you. So whatever it is you're looking for, Bumble's features can help you find it. Date now on Bumble.
There's a cat over here. There's a cat over there. And the wrong one died. And the wrong one died.
Welcome to The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. I'm your host, Mike Abrams, and today we have another amazing guest. She played Joey Lorem in 2018 on the Royal Caribbean cruise line Oasis of the Sea. So welcome, Jackie Good, and thank you for joining me.
Thank you. This is exciting.
Yeah, I'm excited to have you on. I love talking to Joeys because usually Joeys agree with my thesis. So I'm hopeful that I'm going to get a Gus answer today when we get to that part. But before we get to Gus, the jellical choice and everything else, I always love to start with your cat's history. So take me back pre-getting on the boat, pre-signing this contract, pre-going on as Joey. What was the first time you experienced the show and what were your thoughts?
Sure. Okay. So when I was about 10 or 11, so this would have been 96, 97, I saw Cats on the national tour in Binghamton, New York. And I was enthralled, but thoroughly confused. I kept asking my mom, I was like, what is this? What is happening? I mean, I love this. The music is awesome, but like, what is this cat? Who is this person? Explain it to me. And she was like, honey, I don't know. I have no idea. Like, it's cats dancing around. Like, I got nothing. So I listened to the cast album ad nauseum over and over and over again, trying to put the pieces together and figure out this show. I could only guess. But I was really, really into it. I watched the 98 film, loved it, you know, wore out the tape. And I even, in seventh grade English, we had to memorize a poem and then perform it, recite it in front of the cast, or the class rather. And I cheated a little bit and did the naming of cats, and I did it word perfect. I was so excited and, you know, performed it, and my teacher loved it, gave me an A, and I was, you know, totally cheating because I just knew the poem already and I just loved it so much. Sorry, Mrs. Grantier.
I love it.
So then middle school ended, high school came, I got into different musicals. I learned more about other things and kind of moved on. And by college, I was thoroughly embarrassed and never admitted to anyone that I liked cats. I had one of my closest friends was in the national tour, and several other regional productions. And I went to see her a few times to support. When she announced her retirement, she was also a jelly. She announced her retirement from Cats. And I was actually quite thrilled and relieved because I was like, okay, well, I don't have to see cats anymore. Because by that time, you know, I was like, it's kind of cheesy. You know, the dancing is great, but whatever. So then, fast forward to auditioning life. I auditioned for a different theater. And the casting director basically said, like, oh, well, not for this one, but I want you to come in for Cats next week. And I was like, I don't know if I want to do Cats on a cruise ship, but okay. And my first audition did not go well at all. It was the aria in the Growl Tiger portion, and I just botched the Italian. I hadn't prepared enough, and they thank-you'd me out of the room. They said, okay, you know. Yeah. So the next time around, I saw that they were taking appointments, and I submitted, thinking, eh, whatever, like, what can it hurt? So they brought me in again. And the day of the audition, I was in a terrible mood. I had just gotten over a cold. I didn't want to be there. It was the end of audition season. It was mid-May. Auditions had not gone well for me. Lots of callbacks, but no job. So I just felt not really into it. And so I went into the room. I sang the Italian, which had marinated for several months by that point. And they asked me to sing Gus. And I was like, oh, you're not sending me out of the room? Okay, I'm still here. All right. And then they said, this is great. Can you sing the pop song from the other production show, which was called Come Fly With Me? And I got into it about 10 seconds and I cracked and I stopped, like, vocally went like, and I stopped. I was like, no, hold on. We're going to try that again. I'm just getting over a cold. Let's go. And they laughed and I was shocked. I sang it well. And then they called me back. And then, you know, a couple weeks later, I got the job. And by that point, I was excited. And yeah, and I was thrilled.
I love the journey that you got to take of, like, obsessed as a kid, loved it, embarrassed by it as a teenager, college student, had a friend in it, kind of were a little iffy on it because it was like you still hadn't really got in. Did you then, I guess this is maybe jumping ahead, but now it seems like everyone who's been in it is indoctrinated into this, like, family, and you become obsessed. Like, are you full circle? Like, are you back to the child you of now where you're like, oh, I get it. I'm obsessed with this still?
Absolutely. Yes. I am fully ingrained, fully into it. I loved it. It was probably my favorite show that I've done to date. And I've done quite a few at this point, but that was, I was in it and I was like, this is where I should be. We started music rehearsal day one of Cats rehearsal, and I opened the score and we started learning the music, and I was like, oh my God, I know every single note. Like, I don't need to do any studying. I know every single word. I know every single note. Like, great, done. Perfect.
That's awesome.
It was all still in there.
Yeah, your seventh grade teacher coming back to her being like, this was practicing for life. This is truly setting you up for your future.
100%.
I want to shift to the boat because I've been fascinated by the evolution of the boat. I mean, it's been going on for like 15 years now, I think. It's something like that or somewhere in that range. And it's changed now to a 90-minute version. And I've talked to people who've done both sides of it. And you're on the full, we're doing the full show, two times during each cruise. And it's kind of a strange thing because it's a group of people that aren't necessarily a theater goer, where I've chosen to buy tickets or I've chosen to go to the theater and I know I'm going to see two acts, versus it being one of many activities on a cruise to go. And I think that it's kind of a unique thing. I've heard some crazy stories about how, from even one of your castmates, about how there are people that just didn't come for the second act or just left or, you know, maybe come partway through. It's not the same crowd. What was your experience like as you did, you know, your time on the boat? What was your kind of fan interaction of a show? Because it is such a well-known show, but it is a show that is fairly split down the aisle. People love it or hate it. And you're on a captive audience, but an audience that isn't necessarily a paying audience, which is very different.
Yes, absolutely. That was our experience as well. We had people hear Little Memory, that's the end of Act One, and think, oh, well, she sang Memory. That's it. Okay, on to the next thing. Like, let's go to the casino. So, I mean, that was a little disheartening. I'm not going to lie. But, you know, sometimes the houses were full, sometimes they weren't, but there was always someone to play with. So I didn't mind so much, you know, and especially like the second act, you know, we weren't in the audience as much as we were in the first act. So it was, you know, I'm of the opinion that like if there's anyone in the audience, I'm going to give 100% of myself. Like just for that one person, just as I would for a house full of 1,000. So it, you know, it was a bit awkward at times when you're trying to search for someone to play with and there's just no one in the seats. But especially as a cat, you had the excuse to just crawl into the aisle where anybody was sitting and just behave badly. It was great.
there's such a unique piece, and I've now, because of this podcast, I've thought a lot more about cats than I've ever assumed I would think in my life. And one thing on the boat version I've thought a lot about after I talked to, you know, your castmates, a couple people have done on the cruise, is that the whole essence of what Cats is that the Jellicles are letting you into their space and you're lucky to be there. And this thing is happening with or without you. Like, this is our night, this is our thing. And the audience, we're allowing you to see this. And so I do, as I hear you say that, like, as long as there's one person there, you're going for it. It kind of almost embraces the show, which is that if you are taking your character in the experience it's supposed to be, you're actually not singing for them. You're singing for your tribe, and they're just lucky to be
yes.
there. And so it's kind of an interesting way to hear you say that, because it's something that I've thought a little bit about the cruise, where, especially in the pre-90-minute version, where there was, I think, more cases of people, the second act being less full, it almost kind of embodies a little bit of that, which is like, we're still doing this because this is our sacrifice and this is our cult tribe and our thing we're doing tonight. And you, whether it's 1,000 people and everyone on the boat's coming to see it, or the two of you over there are still seeing it, we're doing it. And I kind of love that.
I love that as well. 100%. Totally.
One thing that's super fun for the boat, it sounds like there's a lot more weird experiences. So do you have any fun, do you remember any funny stories of different like crowd interactions or different things that happen just doing it on a cruise ship?
Oh, well, let me think about that. I mean, definitely doing it on a moving stage was interesting. Sometimes you would leap in the air and the actual stage would move and you would not land where you intended to. I remember our closing performance was the rockiest performance we had done, and it was just a trip. We were like, ooh. You know, there was one of the first performances that we as a cast had done. There's a moment where all of us are standing on one leg and looking at Monk, and a big wave hit. And I mean, as a cast member, I was experiencing it, but on the outside, I can only imagine seeing a stage full of cats just go whoosh and lose their balance. I mean, every single one of us lost their balance. I mean, eventually we got our sea legs, but it took some time.
It's
there's a lot of that kind of stuff.
The rake stage is one thing I didn't know about as a non-performer that kind of fascinated me. But, a rake stage is nothing compared to a moving ship and like the actual stage moving within waves. So, yeah, that is, I'm sure, took some time to get used to. And then figuring out where to like be safe and make your moves and not make moves and took time to accommodate.
Oh, definitely. And we did have two versions of the show where we had, you know, the B option, which mostly entailed the tire not rising to the heavy side layer. It just stayed where it was. And we just shoved Grisabella up to the heavy side layer with our arms as she smiled.
Was that because of like because of waves? So like you had a B option when it was basically unsafe to send her out?
Yes.
Wow,
yes.
I never knew that. That's kind of crazy because it's so, it is also a little like so contradictory of like, oh, we're going to sacrifice this cat, but we're, because these are performers, like we got to worry about her safety here before she goes up on the, on the tire.
Oh, absolutely. And the tire had a lot of technical issues. By the time we got there, it had been on the ship for years. So things were not as spry as they once were. So we did have to do the alternate show a few times to accommodate the tire.
Yeah. Sounds like they haven't fixed the tire
since. Not only because of waves, but really?
Yeah, there's. I've talked to a few, one of the 90-minute Grays, a recent one, I think maybe two groups ago, and she got stuck, and she got one time they crashed her, and so it sounds like the same tire is still there, and they're not doing the B version enough as they need to, but we'll send this episode and other previous episodes to Royal Caribbean as a reminder that maybe someone should go fix the heavyside layer for them.
Well, I remember the lore was that the ship was built around the tire. And in order to get the tire out, I mean, don't quote me on this. I mean, I know I'm on a podcast, but I mean, this may not be true. But I, the lore around the ship was that when the Oasis of the Seas was built, it was built around the tire, meaning the tire was in before the hull of the ship was placed. So in order to get the tire out, you'd have to cut a hole in the hull of the ship. I don't know if that's true, but that was the legend.
I love the legend of that.
For what it is.
That is so great that there's just like this whole like extra layer to it. I mean, I kind of, I've been fascinated by the fact that it's run for that this long because it does seem like, I mean, it is a show that's been running for 40 plus years. So it's like, it's the right show to be doing that. But it is like a cruise ship is very dynamic usually in the sense of like, we've got a theater and we can put whatever we want in there and we've got this and we can change the channel on the big screen TV. And this is now hearing that there's, whether it's factual or not, I don't know if we'll ever get a true answer, but the fact that an entire set design was built around the ship is commitment that this show's going to run on that cruise ship for as long as that cruise ship goes.
Yeah. Yep.
That is super fun. There's another piece that I've kind of found super interesting on the cruise ship version is that because it's, I think you do it twice, right? Or one or two times per group. That means you had other responsibilities on the ship. And there seems to be some like differences in fun between the cast because singers had a different idea than dancers. And then there's ensemble versus like the main singing cats. So what was that like? And was there any like challenges with that by having such kind of like a diverse set of jobs you had to do, but that varied heavily amongst your cast?
Yes, I had the least amount of duties to do on that ship. Again, the theory was that the woman who played Jelly on cast one was a West End like dame and had said, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing this, I'm not doing this, and I'm not doing that. And if you want me, you will remove these duties. I will not be doing them. And they conceded. And so therefore, every following Jelly had that same track. So I just did, we did three shows a week. I believe it might have been Saturday, Sunday, Monday. I think it, so the cruise, the turnaround day was Saturday. So we did day one of the cruise, day two, and day three, I believe, if I remember correctly, which I might not be. And then we did I did a jazz set with our old Dute and a Broadway set with old Dute, Grizz, me, and the Gus in one of the venues called Jazz on 4, which was much more of a 54 below type space. If you're a New Yorker, you know what I'm talking about. It's kind of like a cushy cabaret space. And that was it. I didn't have to do passenger drill. I didn't have to light or costume or do anything else. I had a 4-day week, and then I spent the rest of the time in my very beautiful cabin with a giant porthole. I definitely had one of the highest the best gigs on the ship, but the others weren't so lucky, and I was very aware of that. And it was just really unfair. I thought it was really unfair because, especially the dancers, because the dancers had to room with someone below water level. And they had to do so much more. They had a parade that they had to do. They had to do crew duties for all the other shows. Even my other fellow singers, there was another set, called In Concert! Exclamation point, which was mostly like 70s rock in one of the venues called Dazzles. And I was not a part of that, which I was actually really bummed about. I wanted to do it because that's one of my favorite decades of rock. So I went to see it almost every week because I wanted to be in it so badly. but yeah, so I definitely had a pretty cushy contract.
I love
and others so, did not.
Yeah, it's so interesting to hear you say that because I have talked to dancers and there was, I wouldn't say animosity because I think like the cast is still all like, you know, you kind of have to become friends because you kind of climb all over each other for, you know, 3 nights a week. But it was more of the like, oh, okay, I have like different responsibilities based off of mostly your skill set of what you're being assigned to do, and you're signing for a contract. But it's cool to know, and I know I'll pass this along, everyone listening. If you are a jelly or desire to be a jelly, it seems like hopefully that still seems to be the cush version of the job, the princess track for anybody that wants to go on Royal Caribbean. And it's because it's grandfathered in basically at this this like, you know, that's super interesting. I never really heard that story, and I mean, I don't know if it's still the case, but it's kind of a unique lore, another lore of the show that kind of lives on.
I hope you're having a jellical ball. We'll be right back after this quick break.
Praised by Lin-Manuel Miranda as the future of musical theater, SUFS creator Shayna Taub makes Broadway history as only the second woman to write the book, music, lyrics, and star in her own original new musical. Don't miss the much-anticipated Broadway debut of the singular artist that Forbes calls visionary and Billboard anoints as one of the most inventive voices in musical theater. SUFS, the original new musical from Shayna Taub, is now playing on Broadway at the Music Box Theater. Get your tickets today at SUFSmusical.com. The Outsiders on Broadway tells the story of finding where you belong when the world refuses to accept you. Based on Essie Hinton's beloved novel, featuring new music from Jamestown Revival and Justin Levine, and directed by Danya Taymor, Entertainment Weekly says that, with brilliant staging and some of the most captivating stage fighting currently on Broadway, The Outsiders has the power to inspire an entire generation. Get your tickets today at OutsidersMusical.com.
I want to shift to some cat like backstories and theories, because even though you were Joey, I know that you did understudy for Jenny and Grisabella, or you kind of were able to go on for all three. And so I want to hear just a little bit about what were your backstories for these cats? Like, what did you have to add to what you were told? Or what did you think about starting with Joey of like, this is what is I need to play as her every night to give the depth of the character beyond what was given to you?
Okay. Jelly. Starting with Jelly. There wasn't much. I actually have what I was given. I have my piece of paper with my words, practical, cheery, busy. And I also have my little paragraph. So Jelly Lorum is an adult cat who, like Jenny Anydots, looks after the kittens and keeps them in line. She is a caretaker for Gus. They have a long history together. She takes great pride and finds purpose in her role as caretaker. She seems to anticipate Gus's every need and thought. That connection is instant, without thought, and from a place of great love. So that's what I had to start with.
Is that all you
and
were given?
And from that...
Is that paragraph
that
in the three
literally
words?
Literally it.
That's it.
That's it.
Incredible. Okay.
Yep. I mean, but we were encouraged to make stuff up. We were encouraged to talk to each other, my Gus and I, about our relationship. And what I decided was that I had been Gus's wardrobe intern, if you will, when he was in the theater. So deep love of theater, deep admiration for him as an actor, but was behind the scenes. So I made sure that he was groomed and ready to go on stage. And then when he started to take a turn, clearly started losing his memories, clearly started experiencing some sort of, you know, the palsy that he had and the possible dementia, you know, I started taking care of him. I moved out of the theater and started daily personal care.
I love it. I love the wardrobe intern, because I always felt nurse. You know, like nurse was the very common, like, this is what mm-hmm. I just assume, and it's kind of where I think you said you got to with Gus. But it's like, no, I started as like assistant, where I'm just making sure in his heyday when he was a superstar that you were still, you know, around and kind of working with him. So that's, I still can't get over the fact that you were given like 8 sentences and 3 words, and it was like, and fill in the blanks and go, which is not that uncommon. And that's where, I mean, really where this podcast continues is because there's such few, like there's just not enough details that's given across the board. I get almost a different answer from everyone. Now, it's within the same world, but I get a slightly different, like I've never heard wardrobe intern, and I love that. And it's like super fun, and it fits within kind of what she could be. But it is kind of unique that you're not given that much more, and you have to go on every night and essentially embody and embrace this character and sing passionately, especially for Gus, that you have to kind of come up with what the two of your relationship is going to be so you can both play that.
Mm-hmm.
What about...
I had a great time doing it.
What about Jenny and Grace?
Like, that's the creative part.
Yeah.
Jenny, well, part of... I didn't do much thinking about Jenny because my track as covering Jenny was Jelly Anydots. So I didn't leave Jelly behind. I just added all of Jenny's stuff, and the Jenny did vice versa. So the Jenny was Jenny Lorum. We actually gave them names because she, when I was out, which I was out a show and a half, and she was out for 2 shows. So we both had to cover for each other at least once. And it was exhausting.
Did you change costumes?
I did. I did the change into the Jenny big poofy thing, which was very difficult, especially because I wasn't used to it. But I did. I had to do that quick change. I believe I had to leave the stage earlier than I would have had for Jelly.
Yeah. Did you do all the makeup and the whole switch?
No, I did not have to change my makeup. The Jenny and the Jelly makeup is close enough to each other that I didn't have to do any changes at all. It matches Jenny's thing.
Okay.
So I was basically Jelly Lorum until I had to be Jenny Anydots. And then I just went back to my Jelly track. And I might change my position on stage to kind of fill in where Jenny was missing. But for the most part, I just stuck with my jelly. My jelly backstory.
Did you? What about for Grizz? Did you do? Was it? What would be Jelly Bella? Is that how we would do it? Did you do?
No,
Bella?
No, I didn't.
It's totally separate.
Yeah, I actually never went on for Grizz. We had this wonderful Grizz. Her name is Laura Stracco. Like, beautiful, beautiful human being inside and out. And she never had to call out. And which is lucky for me, because I would have probably, you know, paid myself a little bit if I had to go on for Grizz. But so I didn't have to go on. I know that a lot of the folks on the podcast, and we were certainly directed this way, was that Grizz had like gone on to join McCavity, and that's why we were all mad at her. But I never really like bought that. So for me, Grizz was just a person who had, like, a Marilyn Monroe or a Judy Garland, who was just so very talented, just so very beautiful, and just so very loved, and had gone down a dark and twisty path and a sad path. But I didn't really, like, the McCavity thing never really resonated for me. So I let it in a little, but it wasn't the main focus of my show.
Yeah. And this is where it gets back to, there's some parts to what is, like, I think the universal acceptance is that Grizzabelle left the tribe, and what she did in that time was probably not great. And there's some hesitancy to let her back. Now, was that McCavity? Maybe. Was that something else? Maybe. I can tell you my jelly Grizz, Buster for Jones theory, which I know is purely made up by me and not actually at all created anywhere. But as I was trying to, like, figure out these different things, there was a friendship between Grizzabella, Jenny, and Buster for Jones. There seemed to be, like, the three of them were friends. And so I kind of always thought it'd be fun if the animosity of Grizzabella was not that she left to go with McCavity, but that she basically cheated. Like, Jelly and Buster were together, and Grizzabella stole Jelly's man as she was interning with Gus and doing her stuff with Gus. And now she's, you know, when she comes back, it's like, oh, she's back, her again. And you haven't fully forgiven her. And then now you forgive her, and that's kind of the end. And that's why, you know, you kind of embrace her again. It's like, oh, I miss my friend. But that's the forgiveness, which I know has no merit of truth, but I kind of like as a fun story.
Yeah, I mean, that is really interesting, and I like that interpretation a lot. That's not at all what I played.
I don't think anybody plays it that way.
I played... I mean, you could. That's the beauty of the show, is that there are very strict parameters in certain things, but there are other things where it's, you just go wild. Like, have fun. Enjoy. But for me, my jelly was owned, and she had been fixed. So she was not interested in any boy cats whatsoever. And she didn't have any kittens of her own. So she was Aunt Jelly. And Buster for Jones was Jenny's. And it was a big source of teasing, that Jelly would tease her best friend Jenny for just falling over Buster for Jones. Like, in a loving way. Like, Jelly loved that Jenny was, like, completely enamored by Bustafer. She thought it was cute, and she thought it was funny.
That's fun. I don't think I've heard that one before.
As far as Grizz is concerned. Yeah. That was, I said, you kind of, you get to play, you get to make it up as you go along. And this was certainly not fully formed, like, day one of rehearsal. This is how the cast dynamic revealed itself as we went through. Yeah, we just decided that most of the kittens were Jenny's because she's just the motherly cat. And it was, you know, all of our kittens were like, hey, mom.
Yeah.
Hi.
It's Jenny's mom. And I think you can get a little of, like, if you want to have a darker version, you can have Grisabella be mom of a couple of them too. And it's like the abandonment piece of maybe Demeter or maybe Victoria or something like that. But you're exactly right, which is there's just not a lot given. There's not enough spoken word of this. There's not enough, like, true direction. Like, you read the whole paragraph you were given. Like, you read that in 30 seconds or less. You have to fill in the blanks. And so it does become your castmates, you know, that you become friends with and people who are on off. And I've even seen, like, as I've talked to more people, it's like people are friends before they become on the show together. And those cats aren't supposed to be friendly. Mm-hmm. And it's like just hard for them not to have chemistry on stage because they have chemistry off stage. And that's how some of these headcanons and these kind of lore start, which is what allows me to make up stuff all the way in between, which is what I have absolutely loved about this.
Yes.
I want to do some rapid fire. So I want to ask a couple kind of quick questions before we get into the, you know, of course, the important question. So the first one is, if you could go on for one night, who would you want to perform as for any cat, male, female, forget if you vocal range or anything, just if you had one free night to go on and say, I want to do that track, who would you want to be?
Oh, God, if I were 10 years younger, Rumple.
Okay.
It's just such a fun number.
Yeah.
I love it. I love the cartwheels. I love the song is so cute. Rumple, 100%.
Love it. Who are your favorite and least favorite cats?
Oh, God. As Jackie?
As Jackie, yes.
Gus. Gus is my favorite.
That's a jelly answer, not a Jackie answer.
I know. Well, but I definitely identify with Jelly. There's a lot of me in Jelly and there's a lot of Jelly in me.
What about least favorite?
So, yeah, I mean, least favorite. Oh, God, that's so hard. I love them all. I don't know. Maybe Plato. Plato was kind of eh. It's not that I liked or disliked. I just didn't have any opinions. So yeah, Plato.
Okay. What is your favorite song from the show?
Oh, God. My favorite song to sing was definitely Addressing. My favorite song to do, and this is probably extremely controversial, but I loved doing Peaks in the Pollicles because it was just so dumb. It was so unhinged. And I liked making everybody laugh.
I love that. You might be the only one that has said that. So I love that.
I think
you,
I am.
That you love it. It's, at least you know it's controversial, you know it, and you own it. That's the way to do it. Which cat would be the best cruise director?
Oh, God. Ugh. I mean, Tucker would definitely be the, like, Carnival Cruise Line director. I feel like he would be on the party boats. I also did another cruise line, which was a high luxury cruise line. And I think, let me think. Oh, God, I want to say Skimble, but also Misto for one of those. Because, like, Misto is so sparkly.
Yeah.
And he's got the magic tricks. And, like, the cruise director's got to be, like, pa, 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 pa. Like, always got to be entertaining. I feel like, yeah.
Here's how
maybe
I placed
Misto would be the kind of, like,
I placed people in different positions for this boat. So I do think that the two I thought were best were exactly your point, which is Tugger or Mistopheles. I think those are the two that have the personality to have the mic all day, which is, like, basically what you need to do as a cruise director, right? Mm. And I love that you said that Tugger would be Carnival, because that's very, as someone who's been on a Carnival cruise, that is correct. That is fitting. And that made me laugh a lot more than I was expecting to. I think Bustopher's running the food in the back, and I think he's running kind of the luxury stuff in the back. I think Skimble's actually, like, steering the ship with Monkish Trap. Like, I think the two of them are making sure everything's on time, stuff is running in order, and that, like, that they're not, you're not going to crash. Like, those are the two I think are together in charge.
Oh, you know what? Yeah, you're right. I think Skimple would make an excellent captain, and then maybe Monk would be, let me think. I don't. Monk would definitely be up there somewhere. Mm-hmm. Maybe staff captain. He would be staff captain. He would be in charge of the people, like the actual humans working on the ship.
Yeah, I've got a few more.
If that makes any sense.
I think Joey's doing daycare and running sure. like water aerobics for all the like older people doing the, you know, the stuff in the back. I think Jenny's also probably doing yes. some type of like daycare motherly parenting. And I think you've got Mungo Jerry and Ripple Teaser running around stealing stuff from around the boat for McCavity.
Absolutely.
And then I think Bomb and Demeanor are doing your dance. They're your dance numbers. They're the ones that are kind of like doing all the dance behind the scenes and keeping everybody energetic and like running the yoga and the gym and all that type of stuff.
I love that. No notes. 100%.
This is what happens when you spend way too much time thinking about one particular musical for this podcast is you become able to stick them in any situation.
Yes.
Okay.
It's amazing.
$1 million question. I already get length that I don't think Grizabelle's the right jokal choice. So as a Jelly, but really more as Jackie, how do you interpret this? Like, are you going to defend Grizabelle or are you going to choose another jokal choice?
Oh, absolutely not. I am Team Gus all the way. No questions whatsoever. Team Gus. Again, Gus was my favorite as a kid. Like, Gus and Rumple were my two favorites. And I just, yeah, Team Gus. I mean, as Jelly, also Gus for clear reasons, but I, like, in the like, let's say the religion of cats, like, in the world of cats, I made this up, like, just to justify my choices in my own head. That, like, the Heaviside layer is this special kind of death into reincarnation. Whereas, you know, most cats just, they pass and that's it. There's nothing beyond that. And they just go. So I was always Team Gus as Jelly and Jackie because he had lived such a good life, but selfishly, Jelly wanted him to come back. She did not want to say goodbye to him yet. She was not ready for that. She wanted Gus to be chosen to go to the Heaviside Lair so he could come back to her and they could continue to live together and be together. Whereas Grizz, I think Jelly was like, you know, she lost her chance. She wasted her chance. She had a gift and she tossed it away.
I really love that because I love the, like, that is a rebirth. You know, there's like the dark version of cats where it's like mm-hmm. a serial killer, old Deuteronomy, knocking one off every year, just taking somebody out. But I do think there's usually, and I don't think you had it on the boat because there was just not as many ensemble characters, but there's usually a baby Grizz, and there's usually, mm-hmm. it's actually Gus's character in the 2016 revival was called Peter, where he danced at the beginning. So my only challenge with that is that, like, I want Gus to come back, not Peter. But I do think, like, I love that, hey, the full circle of, like, I'm not ready for him to leave. I'm ready for this version of Gus to come, and you want to almost start over with your friend that you've been with through all the years, which is great. How do you then, because now that you've given me the non-Grizabelle answer, how did you on stage every day sell yourself as Joey to choose Grizabelle? Like, what was the thought process for you that to, like, justify her being chosen every night?
Oh, I mean, well, as we staged it, as we did it, so my doot was Doug Eskew, and he was incredible. So Doug actually was motioning to choose Gus. I was positioned next to Gus. Gus was on a stool, and Doug made the motion with his hand to choose Gus as the jellical choice, and in walks Grizz and the music plays, and Stanley, the individual who played Gus, and I were just devastated. inconsolable, extremely upset that she's walked in and interrupted the moment and things are changing and, oh God, what's going to happen? And how I justified it as Jelly was that was, okay, well, Gus has lived a good life. He's done so much. He's left a legacy of this beautiful art that he's made. And I guess I am being selfish and wanting him to be chosen. I don't think he's going to make it to next year, but, you know, I realize that that choice is a selfish one. And this is what's going to happen, and I have to be okay with that.
Jelly is too good of a person for this tribe, is really what this boils down to. As you hear all these other characters that have like very problematic backstories or like very challenging, unique things. And then you get this like very wholesome Jelly who's like completely given everything up for this other character and Cat. And then to even like hear you say that is like, I got to do what's best for the whole group. And that's not what's best for me is like, that is a very Jelly, like that's the Jelly answer, which is what's so like why I wanted to hear kind of your take on it, because it's so unique to hear how everyone processes that. And you got that all from one paragraph.
Again, it didn't, it took some time to evolve. You know, the first few weeks of rehearsal was just getting the steps. Honestly, it was like, this is so hard. I mean, I'm a dancer, but like I'm an aging dancer. And learning the steps and my knees and my hips and my back were not terribly happy with me. But again, this took some time to kind of figure out and evolve. And even up to the last day of performances, I was still trying to figure out new things and like decide on stuff.
Yeah. I love it. Well, this has been so fun. Thank you so much for humoring me and giving us great stories and answers and some things I never heard. How can people stay in touch with you on social media and kind of keep up with what you're doing?
Oh, sure. My Instagram is Jackie Good. It's JackeyGood. My mother agonized over the spelling of my name for months. So it is Odd, JackeyGood. And that's the best way.
Amazing.
I'm most active on Instagram.
Amazing. Well, again, thank you so much for being an amazing guest.
Oh, thank you. This is great. Brought back lots of amazing memories.
I love it. And thanks everyone else for listening to this episode of The Wrong Cat Died, the podcast breakdown of the catastrophe. To follow along, you can subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, or anywhere else to listen to podcasts. Follow us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at The Wrong Cat Died, or check out our website, thewrongcatdied.com.
They say well-behaved women seldom make history. Just ask the Supps. A vibrant and wholly original new musical, Supps celebrates the real women who changed history and their story that is more timely than ever. See the show Variety calls an epic tour de force new musical. Deadline Cheers is a rare Broadway feat and leaves audiences inspired to keep marching. Supps has arrived on Broadway and not a moment too soon. Get your tickets today at suppsmusical.com. If you love Broadway gossip, you are not going to want to miss any episode of this podcast, Singular Sensation, The Triumph of Broadway. Plenty of dramas unfold on stage, but the best dramas unfold backstage. And there were no bigger dramas than behind the scenes of Sunset Boulevard.
So you were being crucified over here, but not there.
No. No, because I was turning in a performance that would get standing ovations. Excuse me.
So check out my podcast, Singular Sensation, for all the juicy and gory details of Sunset Boulevard.